Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, December 11th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
top U.S. and Chinese officials discuss the roadmap for trade talks.
A bail hearing for Huawei's CFO heads into its third day in Vancouver.
J.P. Morgan boosts its odds of a no-deal Brexit after Theresa May pushes a crucial vote into the new year.
President Trump will meet with top Democrats today as a government shutdown looms. Plus, an accused Russian spy told U.S. prosecutors she wants to change her not guilty plea. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Rangers, Devils, and Islanders all lost, and Seattle beat Minnesota in Monday Night Football.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
And U.S. stock index futures are little change this morning. While European equities gained 501 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are, again, little change. So are Dow futures, and NASDAQ futures are up 5. The DAX in Germany is up 1.1%. The CAC in Paris up 1%. FTSE 100 up 0.5%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.33% today. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong gained less than 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 6/32nds, yield 2.88%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.74%. NYMEX crude oil, little change, down 3 cents to $50.97 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.4% or $4.90 to $12.54.30 an ounce. The euro, $1.1383, and the yen, 113.04. This data check brought to you by PGIM and the Search for Alpha. Partner with PGIM, the global investment management businesses of Prudential Financial, Inc. Nathan.
Karen, let's begin with the latest developments on trade. Top officials from the U.S. and China are still talking, despite a diplomatic dispute over the arrest of Huawei's chief financial officer. Bloomberg Daybreak editor Christine Burke has details.
Chinese Vice Premier Liu He spoke to Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer. They held a phone call and discussed the timetable for future trade discussions and also just kind of laid out a roadmap for how these discussions might go over the next couple of months. There were also some reports that these officials talked about potential agricultural purchases by China, and some changes to economic policies were also discussed. It does seem like a signal that talks are continuing in the face of these Huawei tensions, but it remains to see what's going to happen with the Huawei case.
Bloomberg's Christine Burke. Both sides so far are signaling they want to treat trade talks and the Huawei case as separate issues.
Meanwhile, a judge in Canada adjourned the bail hearing for Meng Wanzhou until later today, saying he wasn't satisfied with a bail proposal from the chief financial officer's lawyers. Bloomberg's Obiko Pearson reports from Vancouver.
One of the terms that they offered in their proposal was to have her husband act as something called a surety. So that is a person who acts essentially as a guarantor, somebody who puts up some financial assets to ensure that the person doesn't flee. The judge has said that her husband is not a resident of Canada and cannot be put forth as this guarantor. So he called the hearing to a close and has suggested strongly that the defense come forward with somebody else to act as her surety.
Bloomberg's Natalie Obiko Pearson. Meng is accused of guiding an effort by Huawei to mask violations of sanctions on Iran.
Now, market volatility shows no sign of slowing. The S&P 500 posted a modest gain yesterday after falling as much as 1.9%. Quint Tatro is founder of Jewel Financial.
We became way too oversold. We are now due for, in my opinion, what has started an end-of-the-year bounce and rally.
But one hedge fund pioneer says the current climate may turn sour for investors looking to buy and hold. Paul Tudor Jones tells Bloomberg high market volatility is likely to continue into the new year.
This might be a better time to be a trader than to just hold, because I don't know if we're going to have a huge amount of trends. It could just be an enormously volatile period with a lot of back and forth.
Paul Tudor Jones thinks next year could look a lot like 2007 when stocks climbed to record highs before the financial crisis brought on a recession.
Brexit is also weighing on sentiment, with UK Prime Minister Theresa May pushing the vote on her deal into the new year. That has JP Morgan Chase boosting the odds of a no-deal outcome. James Sullivan is head of equity research for JP Morgan.
We actually took our odds of a no-Brexit outcome up from 20% a week ago to 40%, so significantly greater odds of a no-Brexit outcome, which will have dramatic impact on markets.
Meanwhile, Blue Bay Asset Management sees a second referendum as the most likely outcome. It also expects the pound to head back to its weakest level since the Brexit vote. Right now, sterling is trading at $1.2629.
In Asia today, assets in India had a volatile session after the country's central bank governor resigned. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally has more from our Singapore bureau. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The Nifty turned positive in late Indian trade after earlier being down as much as 1.5% after exit polls showed Prime Minister Modi's ruling party was leading in a key state in the country's state elections. The rupee also paired losses but was still trading lower against the dollar. A stronger yen weighed on Japanese stocks, with the TOPIX closing down by 0.9% in Tokyo. Stocks in Hong Kong and China rose as top Chinese and American trade officials spoke by phone. Tencent shares gained in Hong Kong on news its music IPO could be priced at the midpoint range in the US. Tencent is seeking $1.2 billion in that listing. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. Bloomberg Business Week is out with its rankings of the world's best business schools. Joining us live with details is Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Karen. First, here's how the list is compiled. We survey about 27,000 MBA students, alumni, and recruiters about their experiences and goals. We also use job placement and compensation data from each of the schools. So here it goes. Number one, based on those criteria, Stanford, followed by Wharton. Number three, Harvard, followed by MIT Sloan. And then University of Chicago's Booth School. It's a global ranking. U.S. business schools took 9 of the top 10 rankings. IMD and Lausanne, Switzerland took the number 10 spot. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. And S&P futures are up 3.5 points this morning. Dow futures up 17. And straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. It's 5:07 now on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr, find out what else is going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump is set to meet today with House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi and Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer ahead of a deadline for a partial government shutdown. The president wants a funding package to include at least $5 billion for his proposed border wall with Mexico, an idea Democrats have flatly rejected. Delaware Democratic Senator Chris Coons says he's worried President Trump won't honor any of the deals made during the meeting.
There have been a number of fairly famous moments when the president makes a commitment to a bipartisan bill, whether it's in criminal justice reform or immigration, and then just a matter of days later changes his mind.
The shutdown deadline is December 21st. Maria Butina, who is accused of acting as an undeclared agent of the Kremlin, has decided to change her plea of not guilty. Butina befriended leaders of the National Rifle Association and the Republican Party. President Trump is defending the hush money payments made to two women during his 2016 campaign as a simple private transaction. Trump tweeted yesterday that if there was any wrongdoing, it's his former lawyer Michael Cohen's liability and not his. Republican Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana is slamming Cohen's credibility.
Jesus loves him, but everybody else thinks he's an idiot. I think most Americans think he's a sleazoid grifter. I can't imagine basing any kind of prosecution on the word of Mr. Cohen.
Meanwhile, Senate Democrat Richard Blumenthal is dismissing concerns about Cohen's credibility, saying anybody who thinks that Special Counsel Mueller's investigation is about to close down is engaged in wishful thinking. French leader Emmanuel Macron spoke to his nation last night, promising tax cuts and wage increases in an effort to stem the yellow vest protests. Bloomberg's Gregory Viscusi in Paris reports people are wondering if it's enough.
Interviews on roadblocks across France show that their demands go beyond just cash to wanting deeper changes to France's economy and society. Macron's gamble is that the bulk of French opinion will think that now that he's made a gesture, it's time to end the blockades that have snarled France for more than a month. The problem is that many French simply don't like Macron and his style, and tonight he admitted he's not always appeared sensitive to the concerns of common people. In Paris, Gregory Viscusi, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. We're coming up on 5:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Investors Bank. Here's John Stashow.
Nathan, a couple weeks ago, there was a Monday night game that finished 54-51. It was followed by cries, there's too much scoring these days in the NFL. But Sunday night's game only had one touchdown scored. And last night's game didn't have a TD until there was 3 minutes to go. The Seahawks scored, and then 18 seconds later, they scored again.
Held high, shotgun snap, moves up, avoids the rush. Now being chased, and he throws. The ball knocked free. It bounces. It rolls. It's picked up on the 30-yard line. Running to the 25. Coming to the near side. The 15. The 10. There's a block at the 5. And it's a touchdown. It's a touchdown. Justin Coleman vacuumed in the ball on the fumble by Kirk Cousins and just ran it in. Fumble recovery. 29-yard. Seattle touchdown.
Westwood won the call. Seattle lost the shutout with just over a minute to play, but a 21-7 win over Minnesota. Fourth straight for the Seahawks, who are looking very good for getting the first NFC wildcard spot. The Vikings are just 500, but for now, they still own the second spot. Struggles continue for New York hockey teams. All three lost again. Rangers at Tampa Bay, 6-3. The go-ahead goal scored by the ex-Ranger captain Ryan McDonough. Blue Shirts have dropped 6 of the last 8. Islanders have lost 5 of the last 7. Pittsburgh won 2-1 on a goal in the 5th round of the shootout. Devils have the worst road record in the league. They lost 5-2 at San Jose. NBA saw the Lakers beat Miami. It was the last time that former teammates LeBron James and Dwayne Wade faced each other, Wade retiring after the season. At the baseball winter meetings in Las Vegas, Yankees GM Brian Cashman admits they're interested in signing free agent Manny Machado, but not Bryce Harper. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks very much. Futures contracts have turned positive now, with S&P futures up 5 points, Dow futures ahead by 52, NASDAQ futures up 23 points. Price of the 10-year down 7/32, the yield 2.88%, 2-year treasuries at 2.74%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Sports Report brought to you by Investors Bank. Business wins here. Connect your team with the experts at Investors Bank for business solutions to move your business forward. Investors Bank, banking in your best interest. Member FDIC.
Global News, 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European shares are rallying this morning, and U.S. stock index futures reversing an earlier loss. Asian shares slipped as investors weigh the prospects for success in American-Chinese trade talks. The pound, meanwhile, is rebounding. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 7 points this morning. Dow futures up 64. NASDAQ futures up 31. The DAX in Germany is up 1.3%. CAC in Paris up 1.5%. And the FTSE 100 is up 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 6/32, yield 2.87%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.74%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 20 cents to $51.20 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.4% or $4.90 to $12.54.30 an ounce. The euro is at $1.1386, the British pound $1.2622, and the yen 113.07. And today we're watching for a report on small business optimism out at 6 o'clock Wall Street time. At 8:30, it's the Producer Price Index. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. President Trump will meet with the top Democrats today as a government shutdown looms December 21st. The president will meet with Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi at the White House. The president wants funding for a southern border wall. Maria Butina, the Russian gun rights activist who befriended leaders of the NRA and the Republican Party, has decided to change her not guilty plea. Butina is accused of acting as an undeclared agent of the Kremlin. A hearing is scheduled for tomorrow. In the NHL, the Islanders, Rangers, and Devils all lost. In the NBA, the Celtics won along with the Warriors. The Wizards lost. Monday Night Football, the Seahawks down the Vikings 21-7. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. It is 519 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. And we're joined on this Tuesday morning by Michael Hewson. He's the chief market analyst at CMC Markets. Always good to have you on, Michael. And it seems as far as the U.S. markets are going, at least for the last day or so, what goes down seems to come back up. What are you watching this morning?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're very preoccupied over here, guys, with obviously what's going on with respect to Brexit. But obviously, it is very, you know, it's not difficult to take note of the fact that we have rebounded quite strongly from the initial sell-off that we saw yesterday. And I think for me, nothing really much has changed over the course of the last week or so. Still concerns, obviously, about Chinese-US trade relationships. I think if they can create a degree of separation between the trade talks and what's going on with Huawei, then I think there is potential for some form of deal. And I think that's why you're seeing a little bit of a rebound at the moment. I think markets are trying to look through the noise of the politics and the trade and trying to establish whether or not valuations are cheaper at these sorts of levels. So you're getting a little bit of a rebound, but I am a little bit suspicious of the strength of the rebound, given the fact that an awful lot of the markets here in Europe still very much seem to be of the case of sell the rally as opposed to buy the dip.
Yeah, I'm curious how much equities in Europe are affected by the U.S.-China trade spat.
I think significantly. I think one of the things I took away from those Chinese trade numbers yesterday was the significant fall that we saw in Chinese exports, not only to U.S. markets, but also, I think, to Europe and the broader global economy in general. And I think that is fueling some concerns that ultimately when the U.S. is finished with China, they will eventually turn their attention to their concerns about the European Union, which has political problems of its own. You've only got to look at recent events in France, in Paris, and the rise of populism there to show that there will be a significant effect in fourth quarter GDP for the French economy, on top of the fact that the Italian economy is also showing signs of weakness. And this morning we saw a significant decline in ZEW investor confidence in Germany, and they also suggested that there were concerns about the Eurozone recovery as we head into 2019. So there's an awful lot, I think, for investors to try and get their heads around.
Yeah, let's talk about the obvious elephant in the room, the one you mentioned earlier, Brexit. We are seeing the pound start to get on a bit of a front foot here, but there is certainly, to say there's a great deal of uncertainty is probably understating it.
I think probably that's the understatement of the day, and it is a very, very big elephant with very, very big ears. And you can't really ignore it. And I think one of the things that I took away from Theresa May's shelving of the vote was the fact that ultimately this stands very little. There seems very little chance of that deal actually getting voted through either now or any time in the future. And I think that's one of the reasons you saw the pound sell off yesterday. I think in the wake of that ruling from the European Court yesterday, there was an expectation that it made a hard Brexit or a no-deal Brexit less likely. Given the arithmetic in the House of Commons right now, I think there is a concern that there isn't any appetite or any majority for any type of deal, whether it be for Theresa May's deal, for a people's vote referendum, or for any of the alternatives that are currently being touted as a plan B. And I think there's a concern that we actually could get a Brexit by default of inertia, ultimately the inability of MPs to actually come to any form of agreement before the deadline on March the 29th. And that is a hard deadline. That is a hard deadline. It cannot be moved unless MPs coalesce around an agreement to extend it. And at the moment, I can't see that happening.
Yeah, and we only have about 30 seconds left here. Do you see any room for any MPs to change their minds, particularly with this meeting coming up once again between May and the European Commission?
I can see scope for some MPs changing their mind, but not in enough and not enough of them to really change the arithmetic between now and before Christmas. And I think that suggests to me that the pound is likely to head towards its lows in 2016, around about 120, the longer we stay below 127.
And we're 126.22 at the moment. Michael Hewson, Chief Market Analyst, CMC Markets. Always good to get your insights, sir. Thank you so much for joining us here on Bloomberg Daybreak. And taking a forward look at U.S. futures contracts, they are pointing higher now, with S&P futures up 7 points. Dow futures ahead by 66. NASDAQ futures up by 31 points. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak on this Tuesday morning. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's donor-advised fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy. Open a JCF fund now to lock in a 2018 tax deduction. Visit jcfny.org.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher after yesterday's volatile session, which saw the Dow down more than 500 points before ending the day higher. European averages are rising while stocks in China gained 0.5%.
New developments on the trade front this morning. Despite the arrest of that Huawei executive, China's vice premier spoke by phone with Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer. Beijing says the two sides exchanged views on the roadmap of future trade talks.
UK Prime Minister Theresa May begins a tour of European capitals today as she seeks help on the Irish backstop component of her Brexit plan. The EU is said to be open to more assurances, but won't renegotiate.
At 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time, the U.S. government issues the producer price index for November. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice says economists expect a tame report.
In October, the producer price index rose by the most in 6 years. November looks to be a different story. Bloomberg Economics says the strong dollar probably held producer prices in check last month. Petroleum, meantime, moved lower, most likely muffling commodity and transportation costs and offsetting the impact of White House tariffs. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. Chemet Capital Partners, an investment firm managing funds for two wealthy Chinese families, is piling into two-year treasuries. It's wagering the U.S. economy enters a recession as early as next year.
Shares of WPP are up 4%. The British advertising group plans to cut 2,500 jobs in a bid to grow sales in line with peers and keep its dividend payout stable.
And Tencent Music Entertainment Group, China's largest music streaming service, is guiding potential investors that it could price its $1.2 billion U.S. IPO around the midpoint of a marketed range. The company and existing investors are marketing 82 million American depositary shares at $13 to $15 each. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And futures are higher. S&P futures up 7 points now. Dow futures up 71. NASDAQ futures up 29. The DAX in Germany is up 1.4%. CAC in Paris up 1.5%. And the FTSE 100 up 1%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 2.88%. Yield on the two-year, 2.74%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.8% or 37 cents to $51.38 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.33% at $4.20 to $12.53.60 an ounce. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us what more is going on around the world. Michael.
Nathan, thank you very much. President Trump and top congressional Democrats will meet today in hopes of working out a budget deal to avoid a partial government shutdown. Despite the special counsel's investigations heating up, Senate Democrat Richard Blumenthal says Americans want lawmakers to work together.
Even as we hold the president accountable, whether it's in this session or the next, we have to build roads and airports and bridges. Infrastructure is important. We have to finance the military and the rest of our government.
President Trump wants a funding package for the next fiscal year to include at least $5 billion for his proposed border wall with Mexico. The shutdown deadline is December 21st. Accused Russian spy Maria Butina has told federal prosecutors she wants to change her not guilty plea. Butina, who befriended leaders of the National Rifle Association and GOP members, is accused of acting as an undeclared agent of the Kremlin. Allies of Republican Representative Mark Meadows are pressing for him to be President Donald Trump's new chief of staff to replace outgoing John Kelly. The White House is weighing other serious contenders, including U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker, and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Google Chief Executive Sundar Pichai will testify today before the House Judiciary Committee. Bloomberg's Irv Chapman is in Washington.
At its best, Facebook plays a positive role in our democracy.
That was Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg at a hearing 2 months ago at which Jack Dorsey of Twitter also answered questions, but Google was represented, embarrassingly, by an empty chair. This morning, Pichai will testify solo. Republicans have accused Google of downgrading conservative voices in its news feed. Democrats are increasingly concerned with Google using information provided by its users without clearly informing them. Pichai can also expect questions on his decision to consider offering China a search engine with a great wall of censorship built in. In Washington, Irv Chapman, Bloomberg Radio.
French President Emmanuel Macron has promised tax relief for struggling workers and retirees and acknowledged he's partially responsible for the anger that has fueled almost 4 weeks of protests. Macron pleaded in a TV address last night for a return to calm. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update brought to you by Investors Bank. Here's John Stanshauer.
Nathan, Monday Night Football with a lot of NFC wildcard playoff implications. If the season ended now, the Seahawks and Vikings would have the two spots. Seattle won 21-7, almost all the scoring coming in the last 3 minutes. Seahawks have now won four in a row and at 8-5. They're in very good shape to get in. The Vikings are just 500, still good enough for the second spot, but it also means the Giants, incredibly, at 5-8, are alive for the playoffs if they can win their last three games. Of the four teams that were in the NFL's Final Four last season, only one, New England, is over 500 this year. Rangers were in Tampa, ran into the NHL's best team, lost to the Lightning 6-3. Kevin Hayes, two goals for the Blue Shirts. Islanders were in Pittsburgh, went all the way to the fifth round of the shootout. Jake Gensel's goal won it for the Penguins 2-1. Devils still only three road wins. They fell at San Jose 5-2. Baseball winter meetings underway in Vegas, and Yankees GM Brian Cashman admitted he's been talking to the agent for star free agent Manny Machado. Yankee shortstop D.D. Gregorius going to miss at least the first half of next season after Tommy John surgery. Yanks manager Aaron Boone asked on the Yes Network if that means they need to find a replacement.
That is an area where I know Cash is working really hard to kick every kind of option through the trade market, through free agency. So we're certainly trying to upgrade that and trying to at least get somebody from a stopgap to a long-term solution in there. But we feel like we have really good options internally, too.
And that includes moving second baseman Gleyber Torres to short. Cashman ruled out signing the other big free agent, Bryce Harper. He said he already has enough outfielders. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanshauer. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks very much. It is 5:37. On Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover, the Bloomberg 50, the 50 people who shaped 2018 in unexpected ways. Also in this week's edition, how the Me Too movement is impacting women on Wall Street. Katya Borzakansky wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
What we found is a lot of men are leaving women out of meetings, leaving women out of after work drinks, leaving women out of even job opportunities. The idea is more of a protectionist kind of policy. There is a concern of potentially getting into trouble because of an interaction that was misinterpreted.
Read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report and Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Ed.
Good morning, Nathan. An antitrust lawsuit brought by states over just two drugs in 2016 has now exploded into a probe of alleged price fixing involving at least 16 companies and 300 medications. Connecticut's Attorney General George Jepson says it could be what he calls the largest cartel in the history of the United States. Troubling findings are contained in a report released Monday on Newark's University Hospital. A hospital expert tapped by the Department of Health has identified a range of problems, including a lack of leadership, no strategic plan, poor internal accountability and communication, and limited board oversight. Russian Samovar, the Manhattan restaurant, has filed for bankruptcy. Legendary dancer Mikhail Baryshnikov and Nobel Prize-winning poet Joseph Brodsky were both business partners. The restaurant appeared in an episode of Sex and the City at one time. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thank you, Ed. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Oil companies are shrugging off crude's recent slump with optimistic 2019 spending plans.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about CBS selling its iconic television city in Hollywood to a real estate developer.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following shares in WPP as the world's biggest advertising giant reboots its strategy.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that Sears is said to be gauging what its stores are worth on the open market.
I'm Ed Corey on WOAI in San Antonio. I'm reporting ConocoPhillips sees its shale output increasing 25% next year.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. American business schools take 9 of the top 10 spots in Bloomberg Business Week's annual rankings. Stanford is number one, followed by Penn, Harvard, and MIT. The only non-U.S. school to make the top 10 was IMD in Switzerland. This is Daybreak. Brought to you by Marks Paneth LLP. Marks Paneth accountants and advisors have helped closely held and family businesses reach their goals for over 100 years. At Marks Paneth, success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/success.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European shares rallying. U.S. stock index futures strengthening. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 8 points. Dow futures up 82. NASDAQ futures up 29. DAX in Germany's up 1.5%. 10-year Treasury down 8/32nds. Yield 2.88%. Yield on the 2-year 2.75%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.8% or 39 cents to $51.39 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.3% at $12.53.20 an ounce. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump meets today with Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer and Democratic House Leader Nancy Pelosi to discuss border wall funding. Accused Russian spy Maria Butina has told U.S. prosecutors she wants to change her not guilty plea. In the NHL, the Islanders, Rangers, and Devils all lost. In the NBA, the Celtics and Warriors won. The Wizards lost. Monday Night Football, the Seattle Seahawks, they downed the Minnesota Vikings 21-7. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it is 5:48 on Wall Street. It was 10 years ago today that the man behind the biggest Ponzi scheme ever was arrested. The sordid legacy of Bernie Madoff is remembered by thousands of investors who lost a combined total of nearly $19 billion. Here with this report a decade since the Madoff scheme unraveled is Bloomberg's Bob Moon.
Good morning, everyone. It is Shock and Scandal on Wall Street.
This is how many of Bernard Madoff's victims first learned that their life savings might be gone as Bloomberg's Tom Keene and Ken Pruitt try to make sense of the unfathomable news.
Bernie Madoff, money manager, former chairman of the NASDAQ stock market, arrested, and federal prosecutors called it just a stunning fraud.
And you've got the fear that's out there. Who's exactly running my money?
What do you have to say for yourself? What do you have to say to the public?
anything to say to your victim?
Mr. Madoff, what would you say to all those people that lost money? What would you say to them?
Bernie.
From the time Bloomberg legal team leader David Glover first encountered Madoff on the day of his first court appearance, he recalls that his guilt was never really in doubt.
He confessed to the prosecutors. His lawyers managed to get him free on bail. I think it was a $10 million bail package, which ended up being pretty controversial. But there was never going to be a trial, and you could see Madoff knew it. And when he walked into and out of the court, it was a defeated man.
The immediate question was, where did all that money go? Glovin recalls the panic as the first word broke on the Bloomberg terminal.
Within an hour, I was inundated with emails from investors saying, what is this about? How much money is at stake? And those emails came for weeks, and they had no idea. No idea whatsoever. Did I lose everything?
Glovin's colleague, Bloomberg News federal courts reporter Pat Hurtado, says much of the disbelief at first surrounded the stunning size of the fraud.
There was much frenzy at Bloomberg that maybe we had made an error. People were sending us emails, don't you mean millions? And we kept saying, no, it's billions with a B.
It is epic proportions. The folks that have contacted us are so profoundly invested in these funds that it will alter their lives pretty much forever.
Investor's attorney Stephen Weiss was not overstating the impact on his clients. Many of them, including investor Miriam Siegman, soon assessed the situation as hopeless.
What about getting your money back?
Forget about it.
You don't think,
as they say in Bensonhurst, forget about it.
Authorities moved swiftly, though, to recover as much as they could, and even Madoff's wife lost the life she once knew to a federal raid.
Ruth Madoff, who was in the apartment when we arrived, she has surrendered all personal property to the United States Marshal Service.
In so many tragic ways, Madoff destroyed his own family. Bloomberg News legal reporter Eric Larson has checked on Ruth Madoff lately.
She was basically left close to destitute, gave up almost all their assets. Last I heard, she's living with a relative in Connecticut.
Close to destitute. Is that relative?
Yes, it is. But I've heard on a good account that she really has been left with very, very little.
She was allowed to keep $2.5 million, but has lost both her sons, Andrew to cancer at the age of 48 in 2014. And on a weekend in 2010, on the second anniversary of his father's arrest, son Mark, 46 years old and the father of four children, took his own life. Both of Madoff's sons had worked on another floor of their father's business until, as Bloomberg's Patricia Hurtado recalls, that day Madoff confessed to them and their mother.
They were stunned, and then they went to a family lawyer they knew who walked them into the U.S. Attorney's office in Manhattan and said, we've got something to tell you.
Facing a drumbeat of litigation threats and unable to find a job, Mark Madoff wrote to his lawyer just hours before he died, no one wants to hear the truth. In an interview 3 years later with ABC News, his widow Stephanie put the blame bitterly on her father-in-law.
I hate Bernie Madoff.
There was also the revelation that Madoff had carried on an affair and made his mistress one of his victims after she, too, lost money that she had invested with him. Cheryl Weinstein wrote a tell-all book.
Unfortunately, it was with the biggest crook the world probably has ever seen.
She was just one of so many of Madoff's victims, who may number 27,000 worldwide. Little wonder that just 6 months after his arrest, Madoff was handed the maximum sentence.
Bernard Madoff will go to prison for more than the rest of his life, 150 years in prison.
He had remained uncooperative in identifying others who were involved. But how was one man able to carry out such an elaborate scheme for decades? Bloomberg's Eric Larson followed prosecutors as they made the case against numerous others.
Madoff's top five aides were all convicted after a five-month trial. Also, a lot of other employees pleaded guilty and were witnesses. So a lot of people did know what was going on.
Including the two computer programmers who automated creation of fake trades and customer account statements to trick investors. But it was the legendary Madoff who was at the center of it all, at times using clever marketing tactics, as Bloomberg's Catherine Burton recalls hearing from some investors.
He would say, I don't think I can take any more money. And then people would say, please, please. And then he'd finally say, oh, okay, for you.
And once they were in, despite consistently high returns, many investors insisted they didn't know anything was out of the ordinary. Florida retiree Neil Friedman spoke to Bloomberg's Eric Schatzker in 2009.
I got statements monthly. Everything seemed to be, without question, a very good thing for us.
Did you ever wonder how you could earn that kind of return on what seemed like such a safe investment?
Never questioned it. I never invested in the market. So I really had nothing to compare it with.
Still, in private, Bloomberg's Catherine Burton heard other reasons that some investors kept quiet, even when they thought something illegal might be going on.
They thought the worst case is the SEC comes and shuts it down. They never imagined that he was actually stealing from people.
But the regulator charged with protecting investors, the Securities and Exchange Commission, somehow missed what was happening for decades, even though one firm that complained it was losing business to Madoff put its own fraud investigator on the case, who quickly became convinced such returns were impossible. Harry Markopoulos later told lawmakers he went to the SEC with his findings four times, starting in 2000.
I gave them a roadmap and a flashlight to find the fraud, and they didn't go where I told them to go.
This is huge. How do you miss that?
New York Democrat Gary Ackerman was incensed.
I want to know who is responsible for protecting the security investor, because I want to tell that person or those people that they suck at it.
Madoff seemed to play investigators like a fiddle. And in his own words, during an appearance in October 2007, he hinted at the kind of arguments he was making to fend off regulators.
They tend to look at the industry as if you're making a profit, there's something wrong, even though intellectually they know that shouldn't be.
In a 2013 interview with the Wall Street Journal, Madoff said while he felt remorseful, his investors were, as he put it, sophisticated people, smart enough to know what was going on and how money was made. But, he added, they still invested with me without any explanations. Bloomberg's Catherine Burton says that has changed for the better.
Hedge fund investors, for example, do due diligence. They actually do due diligence, which wasn't always the case before. If you had some friend who you trusted who said, hey, I have this great investment, that was good enough.
A decade after Madoff's arrest, the bitter fight by trustee Irving Picard to recoup investors' lost billions has astounded experts and victims alike. So far, he's recovered $13.3 billion, about 70% of approved claims, by suing those who profited from the scheme, knowingly or not. And Picard has billions more in his sights. In that sense, investors have almost been made whole, except Bloomberg's Eric Larson notes, for the profits Madoff made up.
On top of the $19 billion in principal that was lost, these people thought that they had a combined $45 billion in profit. So they're never getting that back.
Easy come, easy go. On the day Madoff was sentenced, Bert Ross, the former mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey, began to talk about accepting the fact that he had expected a nest egg in the millions of dollars that he would likely never see.
I'm a survivor, not a victim. I wake up every morning and my wife...
And found himself suddenly overcome with emotion.
The things that matter, I have. And he can't take them away.
Bob Moon, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Bob Moon, thank you for that look back. We're going to take a look at the markets now. European shares rallying this morning. U.S. stock index futures are higher as well, recovering from an earlier loss. S&P futures right now up 11 points. Dow futures up 106 and NASDAQ futures up 38. The DAX in Germany is up 1.6%. So is the CAC in Paris. And the FTSE 100 is higher as well, up more than 1%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32. The yield 2.88% and the yield on the 2-year 2.75%. The 30-year yield is at 3.14%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.7% or 37 cents to $51.37 a barrel. COMEX gold is higher, up 0.33%, up $4 to $12.53.40 an ounce. And the British pound higher against the dollar at $1.26.11, the euro at $1.13.88, and the yen 113.12. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.